On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
We are here today to remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice for their country and those who suffered and came back, in many cases are still suffering from PTSD or the effects of Agent Orange and all kinds of other things. And we're here today to pay tribute to the men and the women who served in Vietnam. Our special guest today is Ed Sherwood, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Army, retired. His new book is Courage Under Fire, the 101st Airborne's Hidden Battle at Tam Kỳ, and it is from Casemate Publishers. He led an infantry platoon with the 101st at Tam Kỳ. He was wounded on June the 2nd, 1969. After Vietnam, he served in multiple infantry assignments in the 3rd Armored Division in Germany, U.S. Army Infantry School, and the 197th Infantry Brigade at Fort Benning, Georgia. He completed airborne training before Vietnam. Sherwood fulfilled a goal he set at age 12 to follow in the footsteps of his stepfather, a World War II and Korean War infantry veteran. He left active duty as a lieutenant colonel in 1988 due to a service-connected disability and has continued close involvement with the U.S. Army and infantry that he loves. The queen of battle, the infantry. Ed, thank you so much for joining us today on the Bookshelf.
Well, I enjoyed being here, and thank you for asking me.
Now, before we get started, and we do have serious stuff to talk about today, but there is a nice connection that we were chatting about just before we started recording, and that was that you actually went to high school in Ozark, Alabama, back in the 1950s when you were a junior in high school, and the basketball team played at Troy State Teachers College, I think it would have been called in those days, which is
absolutely
amazing. And your dad was at Fort Rucker in those days.
He was, sergeant first class, still an NCO in the Army, and we were bussed over to Ozark from Fort Rucker every day, and it was one of my most pleasant experiences growing up. Great school, great people, but I have great memories from those days.
Well, Fort Rucker has certainly grown a lot since then. I actually had my oldest first cousin, who was a career Army guy, and he did two tours as a helicopter pilot in Vietnam and ended up teaching at Fort Rucker for a while, which finished his career as a command sergeant major. The year is 1969, and the Vietnam War is entering a different phase. I was a paper boy during this time. I was in junior high school. And every morning as I folded up the papers to throw them, I followed the progress of the Vietnam War and remembered what had happened a year earlier in the Tet Offensive and what we know now, and that the military knew then but the population did not know then, is that how it was reported to us back in the United States, the Tet Offensive, was not really accurate at all. According to your book and several other books that I read about Vietnam, the Tet Offensive was a strategic disaster, for the North Vietnamese Army, and practically wiped out the Viet Cong, right?
That's correct. It was one of those cases where it was a military victory for the United States, but it was a political defeat in the long run. Set the character of the war for the rest of the war, actually.
And here we are a year later. A major land battle has been fought at a site that we colloquially refer to as Hamburger Hill. And this battle in which you will be engaged takes place in the shadow of that battle and yet is never reported due to political reasons to the public at all.
That's correct. Hamburger Hill started on May 10th. And we deployed to Tam Kỳ from actually the southern HL. Hamburger Hill was in the northern part of the valley, about 30 miles north. We went down to Tam Kỳ, about 100 miles south of where we were in the HL. And we started our battle on the 15th of May. Well, Hamburger Hill lasted for 10 days. And when the casualties were reported in Washington, D.C., it had terrible political repercussions. Senator Ted Kennedy went to the floor of the Senate and denounced the battle as irresponsible. What had happened on the interim on May 14th, President Nixon had said in his first war speech, first time he had been president, just 5 months, he announced to the nation, actually to the world, that we were no longer seeking a purely military solution in Vietnam. That was on 14 May. I'm not even aware, and I could not determine in my research, whether he knew Hamburger Hill was ongoing at the time. I don't think so. But when the casualties were announced on the 20th of May, just a week after he had made his announcement, we had these heavy casualties just after he said he was seeking peace with honor. But we started our battle on the 15th, and actually most of our casualties occurred in the first 28, 30 days. And the media was totally focused on Hamburger Hill. And the senior command in Vietnam kept the media away from the battle we were fighting. It ended up lasting more than 28 days. It went all the way to August. And in that period of time, we had more casualties, more killed in action than Hamburger Hill. I don't ever make any unfavorable comparisons between the two battles. They were both heavily hard-fought battles. Soldiers courageous in both battles. Take nothing away from Hamburger Hill. The difference, both of them were bitterly fought. The big difference is one was known, well known, maybe too well known, and the battle at Tam Kỳ was not known at all and kept from the public. I'll let you go ahead and ask another question, but later I can tell you why I think it was a good decision initially maybe not disclose the battle immediately, but to keep it undisclosed throughout the war was not a good decision.
In the first 6 months alone in 1969, there were 7,554 GIs who were killed in Vietnam. To compare that, a total of 6,826 U.S. service members were killed during the entire Afghanistan and Iraqi wars combined. So 1969 was a brutal year for the U.S. military in Vietnam. The battle in which you were engaged, official name of this was Operation Lamar Plain.
That is correct. Between the battle at Hamburger Hill, which was formerly called Operation Apache Snow, and Operation Lamar Plain, within a period of just weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, there would have been over 1,000 casualties had both battles been reported publicly.
Wow.
And that, I mean, that's killed and wounded. President Nixon really wanted to bring an end to the war. I truly believe he got elected on that basis, to bring an end to the war. Peace with honor was his phrase. And he wanted to turn the war over to the South Vietnamese Army. And he was already planning to bring troops home in the late summer. And had that 1,000 casualties been announced, it would have just upset the apple cart. That's
right.
Why I say I can understand why they didn't disclose the second battle initially, because they really did want to move quickly, and they needed time to turn it over to the South Vietnamese. And they were running out of time. That would have called for immediate end to the war. And maybe that would have been good in hindsight, to bring the war to a quicker end. But, I don't really have any observation on that.
Right.
But anyway, that's why it was not announced.
I think it's important for people to realize, and this is one of the reasons that you wrote the book, is to say the American fighting forces in Vietnam were dedicated, they were well-trained, they were constantly, when you're on patrol, you're constantly aware that any second now a firefight could break out. This is an enormously stressful time. PTSD is a different thing, but there was a stress that was put on you in a battle situation, especially when the battle just stretches for days and days. And one of the things that you wanted to do with the book is say, look, these guys were brave, they were dedicated, and they did their very best, and they deserve more credit than they've gotten, and especially the ones that fought at Tam Kỳ, who most people don't even know that this occurred.
Well, that's exactly right. Everybody who came through those years remembers that the way movies and books often characterize the young infantry soldier, later homeless, psychotic, drug user, and just did not do justice to the many young men who served faithfully. As I see in the book, when we got in a fight, you couldn't tell the difference between those who were volunteers and had enlisted or the draftees. They were all committed. They were all, you know, I make the point, most of them, as I was myself, were the sons, grandsons, the nephews of veterans of the Korean War and World War II.
Right.
They had grown up hearing those stories. And I really think they had a legacy to uphold. They didn't want to dishonor their families. They didn't want to dishonor the unit. 101st is the storied unit. I think if the average person on the street, if they know any unit in the United States Army, the 101st Airborne Screaming Eagles, they know of them from D-Day in World War II, jumping behind lines.
Mm-hmm.
The Battle of the Bulge is a big battle that people remember from those days. The Band of Brothers, a more recent story about 101st in World War II. And then, of course, Hamburger Hill. If anybody can point to one battle in Vietnam, it's Hamburger Hill. And it's not all often pointed to with great admiration, but I'll tell you this, the 101st Airborne celebrates that as military victory every year. I'll be up there again in June, and they'll just have finished their celebration at Hamburger Hill, because they're honoring the young soldiers, the young privates, the young specialists, the young sergeants who actually fought the infantry war. And that's who I wrote about. That's who the book is really about.
I think it would probably help for people who have not been in the military, and this was part of the misunderstanding about so-called Hamburger Hill, is that people who didn't know why battles were fought or how battles were fought only heard they fought for this territory, and then after the enemy moved on, they left the territory, because we still were thinking in our minds that it's like the Civil War or something, that it, once you conquer a portion of territory, you set up a defensive position there, and it's yours now. This is not a very realistic understanding of battle in general, but particularly not during Vietnam.
That's correct. There were strategic places that needed to be held. For example, Tam Kỳ was the capital of the Quang Tinh province, and the North Vietnamese Army was attempting to take it over. We were well away from Tam Kỳ. We call it the Battle of Tam Kỳ locally, but we were 15 kilometers off, almost 6-8 miles from Tam Kỳ. The whole idea was force on force, trying to make it too costly for North Vietnam to continue the war by essentially attacking and destroying their enemy forces. Actually, that's what happened to us. It became too costly for us. And that's why the war became unpopular.
Right.
But it was not. It was mainly force on force. We were fighting out in a mountainous area, away from the populations. We had to go where the enemy was, and so that, you know, frequently they would come in and attack fixed bases. But it wasn't so much about territory as it was unit against unit.
When you guys are deployed there, you're moved by helicopter there, and it's a pretty big movement. You're taking a company out.
Well, we actually were working as a battalion because of the size of the enemy force. And a battalion, just for those that may not know it, typically an infantry battalion would have six companies in it back in those days, four infantry companies of about 100 men each. A combat support company that would have mortars and anti-tank weapons, and then a headquarters company. So all total, fighting strength of a battalion may be around 400, 500 combat soldiers.
Okay. Battalion is being moved by helicopters, and the movement into the area goes better than you guys expected, because you knew that there were ports of enemy troop movement in the area, right?
Well, exactly. We were actually responding to a tactical emergency. AmeriCal Division was the division below, and their area of operation was the one that had the tactical emergency in the headquarters, Military Assistance Command Vietnam, moved one of our brigades down to the AmeriCal division. Now, a brigade has got, the brigade that moved had two infantry battalions, an artillery battalion, a whole bunch of, you know, aviation battalions, attack helicopters, logistics, intelligence, the whole thing. Over 3,000, probably as much as 3,500 soldiers were in the brigade that moved south. It was not a little operation. Our battalion was on the point of the spear. We were the first to arrive down there. We picked up another battalion from the AmeriCal division, so we were three battalions strong. I can tell you what our first combat action was like right after we got down there. Well, we arrived on the 15th. We moved the entire brigade in almost a 24-hour period. We were an air mobile division. One of the reasons we were called to be the reinforcement was we had all the helicopters and capability, the mobility. There's an old saying with the 101st, if you want it done, call the 101. And so the first brigade was that fire brigade. You know, we got a fire over here, and you send the first brigade to put it out.
Gotcha.
And so we came down there, and within a few days, on May 21st, we spent 4 days looking for the enemy. They didn't want to be found until they were ready to be found. That was rule one. They usually knew where we were, and we were looking for them. And they knew the area, we didn't. But on May 21st, they wanted to be found. And there was about 100 North Vietnamese, huge bunker complex, bigger than a football field. And our battalion was coming in from three different directions. And we fought them all day long in that bunker complex. I mean, it was fortified concrete, steel overhead bunkers. You could not see it until you were standing almost right on top of it. We had a number of people killed that day. It was the largest number of casualties that we had experienced up to that time. When we were out at the HL, we had light casualties, light combat. But when we went down there, we knew that we had gotten into a completely different war. And so the number of casualties we had, it's a lot. We had about 19 killed and about 50 wounded. And it was a large number for one-day fight. And as we get into the interview, I want to make sure I share with you what happened a few days later when Memorial Day actually came up in the field. By the time Memorial Day rolled around, we had been at Tam Kỳ for just 2 weeks. It happened, Memorial Day was May 30th, 1969. By Memorial Day, we had 27 soldiers killed and 92 wounded. That is a large number. That is as big. That's as big as any of the infantry companies. We lost, in effect, an infantry company during the fight. And we had four medics killed in action. Actually, later on, we'll have a total of 9 medics killed in a 22-day period, and that shows the intensity of the fight. But anyway, when Memorial Day came around, I don't think there was a soul in our company, maybe even in the battalion, that knew it was Memorial Day. We were having our own Memorial Day. We had just lost a lot of guys, and we were still remembering who they were, their faces, you know, the fact that they were probably, on Memorial Day, the ones that were killed on 21 May, they were just, their bodies were probably just arriving at home. Next of kin had been notified. We were grieving their deaths in Vietnam, not knowing it was Memorial Day. Hmm. And when you're in battle, you can't really dwell on your losses because you've got to be alert. You've got to have your attention on what's happening rather than just dwelling on the lost guys in your unit. And it's never a sterile number when you're in battle. You know their names. You know their ranks. Often you know their hometowns. That's why in my book I put all of that in there. A lot of military books, Vietnam books particularly, they just talk about casualties and have the numbers. Every time somebody's wounded or every time somebody's killed, I made sure I got their name. probably not perfect because the military records aren't perfect.
Yeah, and you tell their stories whenever possible, where they came from, their families, their relationship to the military before they were ever in it themselves. And also,
I want to humanize it rather than just making a sterile casualty number.
And the day before Memorial Day 1969, you suddenly realize, oh, today's my birthday. I find that so kind of an incredible thing, but also considering the circumstances, I totally get that. At this point, your focus is not on, gee, how am I going to celebrate my upcoming birthday? It's, gee, how am I going to make sure I make it to my upcoming birthday?
In fact, I had that thought. You know, we had already lost one of our platoon leaders, and we'd lost a lot of men, good men. And who knew what happened? You can't think, you know, it's always a surprise when you get wounded in battle. You don't go, you're fear. I think everybody's afraid. I have one sergeant who died two years ago. We became very close. He was my best combat leader, a young sergeant named Jim Littleton. He asked me if I was going to use the word hero in the book. I said, Jim, I'm not going to do that. I said, we didn't think of ourselves as heroes. We were just doing our job. And he said, well, that's good. He went on to say, well, Ed, do you think a movie will ever be made out of this book? And I said, I don't know. I've got to get the book out. We'll see. And he said, well, if the movie happens, famous guy, he said he wanted him to play his part. And when I said, Jim, you do realize that guy's been dead 20 years. But anyway, Jim made it real clear to me that as my best combat leader, he was afraid all the time. And he had fear all the time. If you didn't have fear in that situation, you were just not doing your job right.
Yeah, you weren't paying attention.
Exactly.
Well, now, so, before the battle is over, you will be wounded. This was an attrition rate that we saw by reading your book and realizing our time is limited, that there were a number of the on-the-ground leaders that were injured or killed, which meant constantly men were having to step up and take over units that had been previously filled by somebody who was of a higher rank. And these guys did so courageously and competently.
They certainly did. And I would say this. We were short senior enlisted non-commissioned officers to start with. A company would normally have 3 sergeant first class and about 12 staff sergeants. We didn't have any. We had 1 sergeant first class got killed first battle, and we only had 1 other E6 or staff sergeant, where we should have had 12. We had 1.
Wow.
And he was the senior non-commissioned officer. So these young soldiers, that's another reason that I wrote, not only were they courageous, they stepped up and took over. In one case, a young specialist, not even a sergeant, ran a platoon when his platoon leader got wounded. That's the story that doesn't get told often in the movies like Apocalypse right. Now and Platoon and all of that. These guys, they got the job. They were every bit as good as soldiers as the soldiers in the Korean War and World War II. And that story did not survive out of Vietnam.
Yeah. You also had 9 medics that were killed during your 23 days of combat there. And you ended up, your field strength declined 53% due to battle losses in this one long battle.
Now you're getting an idea of why the battle was not disclosed. I used the word hidden in the title. Officially, it was not disclosed. And one of the reasons it was not disclosed is the strategy was to turn the battle over to the South Vietnamese Army. And if large numbers of U.S. casualties continued to be reported, people would say, well, that's not working very well, is that we're still taking all the plasmids.
Right.
So I would like, can I say just a brief word? Back in the United States, Memorial Day, we weren't aware of it on the battlefield, but back in the United States, you know, our dead were just being celebrated for the first time. World War One veterans were still in force, 116,000 plus killed in World War One. World War II, 400-something thousand killed. Well, we were already at 33,000 killed. The war protest movement was pretty aggressive, and they were basically seeing the Vietnam soldiers, some of them were saying they shouldn't be honored, that the war was unjust. And they were victims. If they were killed in the Vietnam War, they were victims,
right?
Not heroes, that type of thing. So it was tough on the families who had just lost son. And I think that continued for a good while, because 1969 was the year that the majority of Americans were not in favor of sending soldiers to Vietnam. It went from, you know, in 68, which was the highest casualty year of the war, it turned at tip, just like you said in the beginning. And then by 69 rolls around, about 52-53% of folks wanted us out, wanted the war stopped. And, you know, that's just the way it was on Memorial Day. Hmm. I think we've recovered from that now. I think Vietnam veterans are celebrated just as well as anyone. I don't even like the March 30, I think it's March 31, that President Trump set up as a special day to honor Vietnam. I think Vietnam guys, we want to be lumped in with everybody else. Yeah. We don't need our special day.
There's so much detail that you present in this very comprehensive look at what is one of the last major U.S. offensive operations in the Vietnam War, and the last great land battle. I think it's absolutely fascinating. I'm so thrilled that I had a chance to read your book and to talk to you about it, and to say to you a phrase that has become a cliche, and that's terrible, that we appreciate your service, but also that thanks to this book, we honor the fallen. And we will not forget them.
And I thank you for that. If that thought could get out, that would be great reward for writing the book, is to let folks know we had a lot of courageous young infantrymen that fought that war. Well, medics, artillerymen, a whole bit, aviators.
Well, I think this book is going to do a terrific job in getting that word out, and we certainly will do our little part on the radio and on my podcast and website and all to let people know what you guys did and the sacrifices that were made, and they will not be forgotten. I thank you for writing the book and for making time to talk to us today. And
well, thank you, and God bless you, and appreciate your interest in it, and I hope some of my friends from high school days hear your program.
Me too.
In Ozark, Alabama.
Our thanks to Lieutenant Colonel Ed Sherwood, U.S. Army retired, the author of Courage Under Fire, the 101st Airborne's Hidden Battle at Tam Key. It's from Casemate Publishers. You can check their website, casematepublishers.com. We can never say thank you enough to those who came back, and for those who did not. This Memorial Day, remember. We'll see you next week right here on your favorite radio station and your favorite podcast. We'll be taking a look at D-Day. It's the anniversary. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.